Well, good evening, everyone. My name is David, and I'm delighted to know I'm alcoholic. And I'd like to welcome you to this open air recovery workshop with Q&A. And along with Stuart,
Hello,
can you?
dear. I'm alcoholic. I'll see you later for the Q&A. You're all very welcome.
Thank you. So this is one of a series of workshops which has been inspired by recoveryspeakers.com, and of course we've been inspired by Mike McKillop, and as we know, there's a memorial meeting for Mike tonight at 7 in Central Standard Time in the US, and that's at 1 p.m. in the UK. And I will put details for that into the chat as we go through the meeting. So we've had a common thread throughout these, and you can take this whatever way you wish, but the common thread we like is after step nine promises. Bill Wilson said, we've entered the world of the spirit, and you can take that whatever way you want, enter the world of the spirit. And he said, our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. And I've been doing a hell of a lot of, not a hell of a lot, but a lot of that since I joined AA, but in particular in the last couple of years since we got involved in the presentation. So I'd like to thank all our presenters. And we've got Joe C with us tonight, and I'm sure many of you have come across Joe C on Rebellion Dogs Publishing, fantastic little treasure trove as well. And Joe is going to be doing his presentation tonight on Our Survey Says, How AA Changes and How We Stay the Same. What have we learned from 50 years of AA membership surveys? And so I'm thrilled that Joe's agreed to do this for us. And we're just going to go over and do a little silent. I'm going to kind of do two things before, if I may, before we just start. It's two little things I wanted to do before we get into this and just fly off the stuff. Just member participation. I let you unmute in 1 second. This should just come up. Here we go. So what I'll do first, if it's okay, we'll just do the evening gather first. And as I say, we have a mixture of people, members with us tonight. So this is fantastic. So if you'd like to unmute, Stuart, maybe I can let, if you'd like to unmute, please do. I hope you can unmute. If you'd like to join in this, please do. The evening gather. Let me
respectfully remind you of life and death and of their supreme importance. Time swiftly passes by, an opportunity is lost. Do not squander your life.
And Bill Shaver, the author of Writing the Big Book, The Creation of AA, introduced us to that. Every Thursday we kind of read out with Bill, and we read a chapter of his book every Thursday as well. Please join me in this version of the set-aside prayer as well, if you'd like to. Of course, we're using God, whatever that, infinity, whatever that means. So God,
please help me to set aside everything that I know,
with an open mind,
to understanding.
Amen.
And we're just going to have a few moments in silence to gather our thoughts, reflect on why we're here. Of course, we're thinking of the alcoholics who are still suffering from alcoholism. And we're also thinking of our family members, the blameless children, as you said, and the blameless wives and husbands. So with that, I'm delighted to welcome from Ontario, Toronto, Joe C. All yours, Joe. Our survey says.
Hey, everybody. My name's Joe, and I am a happy customer of Alcoholics Anonymous and a member of Beyond Belief, Agnostics and Freethinkers AA group. Once in Toronto at the University of Toronto, now all around the world on Zoom. So let's just see here if everything works like it should. Only a click away from, here we go. Hopefully everyone can see that. So we're looking at AA's membership survey, and this is something that in the United States and Canada, they've been doing since 1968. And in Great Britain, they've been doing it since 1972. There are other places that do surveys as well. And I've seen New Zealand surveys. I've seen some others. But these are the only ones I've done a bit of research on. So they're what I will talk about. Why do we have them? Originally, it was an idea that came from our public information friends. They needed something to sort of show the general public and to professionals who treat alcoholics a little bit about what you would find in a typical AA meeting and what our membership is made up of. And it's also been a way that we take inventory of ourselves, where we look at some of our demographics. We end up having this empirical data ourselves, and we can just sort of look at how we're doing at our primary purpose. Are we reaching out to the alcoholic that still suffers in every nook and cranny? I think sometimes I get the idea, you know, I grew up in one place, got sober in one place, went to about 20 meetings and had a sense of that's how AA is. but even if I'd been to 1,000 groups, and I don't think I have yet, I've only been to 1/120th of all of AA. So what do I know? And sometimes I think AA just stays the same, but I think we'll see in this, and you tell me when we're done, that AA is ever changing. It isn't stagnant at all. And, you know, for better or for worse, we keep changing. And I'm going to get through these about 25 slides just as idea starters, and we'll leave the rest for Q&A, and we can go into more detail depending on what piques your imagination. So this is the 1983 one showing people what we do for a living and how many meetings a week we go to, what our demo is, what our age and gender and ethnic background is, our length of sobriety. We started asking more questions like, how did we find out about AA? Did we have any interventions from the medical community or the police? This is our most recent North American membership survey. If you Google p48aa.org, you'll come up with this PDF from 2014. Inside that pamphlet, you'll see that the survey is to inform professionals and to help AA guide ourselves in terms of what our next best efforts should be. In the presentation given to the 2021 General Service Conference in Great Britain, Manny Medahani, he gave a report. He is a non-alcoholic trustee. That's why his first and last name is used here. And he is a clinical psychologist. So he came to AA as someone who treated people with alcohol use disorder and other substance use problems. And we changed his attitude about Alcoholics Anonymous. So they started with the 20, they do their survey. Ours is triennial every 3 years. In the UK, it's every 5 years, quinquennial. So they took the 2015 survey and they use it as a template. They decided they wanted to ask some other questions. They did that. How accurate are these? Well, we can talk about that. You tell me if it looks like the AA you live in. But what they are telling us is that 95% of the time, the figures they show us are within 2 percentage points. Now, this is really quite cute. I copied this right out of the report given in 2021. So if they're showing 61%, then 95% of the time, that'll be in the range of 57 to 63%. Now, it should be 59%, but I suppose they're showing us that only 95% of the time it's in the 2% range. I didn't make that up. That came with the report. And sometimes numbers are rounded off. So we'll go through some of these, and sometimes they don't equal 100. In some questions, people can answer more than one, and sometimes they round up or round down. So this is a closer look. This sandwich board we used at our home group when we were meeting in person. We've just started an in-person meeting back at the University of Toronto, where we started in 2029. And ours is an open meeting, meaning that it's for alcoholics and anybody interested in AA. So spouses can come. We're in a university, so we'll periodically get medical students, nursing students, psychology students, faculty. They're all welcome. And this sandwich board would meet them right at the literature table, and it shows them pretty much, you know, all of the questions they came with. How old are AA members? The average is 50, but 1% of us are teenagers. So is that a small number? Well, here's an unfair question to ask when everyone's muted. How many AA members are there? According to the GSO numbers, it's around 2 million. So that's 20,000 people who aren't old enough to have a legal drink, already sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know if they're underrepresented or well represented, but we do this, and we do a breakdown, and we talk about how long people have been sober. People go to 2.5 meetings a week on average. 18% of people don't have a sponsor. 82% do. 59% were referred to AA by a medical caregiver or a psychologist. And after coming to AA, 50% of members go to some sort of counseling to help with their drinking problem. And 84% of that 58% say that that adds a great deal to their quality of life and sobriety. And we also talk about what we do for a living. Now, about taking inventory, here's a couple of examples of how we do that. In 2013, the committee actually formed a subcommittee to consider the methods we use, how we're doing it, and also they took information gathered from members. In other words, they went out to the meetings, they went out to the areas, they went out to the, where AA's met, and asked them about the survey pamphlet and what they thought about. Should we do it? What could we alter or improve? And this most recent year in Brooklyn, the 72nd Annual General Service Conference, that was April 2022. And in the keynote address, Kathy F., she was the Pacific Region Trustee. This came from her presentation. Does RAA membership reflect the population? In past surveys, we have seen the answer is no. There are still millions who suffer from alcoholism who don't know about AA or feel that AA is not the place for them. I think we're inclusive in our hearts and inclusive in our minds, but are we doing our best to find out what we can do for this still suffering? We ask ourselves, if we were in their shoes, if we were one of these underrepresented populations, how would we like to be approached? Keep that in mind. The 2022 survey in Canada, USA was completed. They added some new questions. We'll be seeing it later this year. But see if you notice the difference. Have you attended an AA meeting virtually, online or by phone? Do you prefer virtual? Do you prefer in person? Do you like them both equally? What attributes do you prefer or need in meetings you attend? Accessibility, such as no stairs or electric doors or good public transit. Held in a particular language, what language would be better? Other members similar to me, are you a member of an underrepresented population? The LGBTQIA community, young peoples, atheists and agnostics, or lawyers? Yes, even lawyers need people just like them, and they have their own meetings. Or additional characteristics, please describe. So instead of binary this or that answers, people can actually describe in their own words their experience of AA. What best describes you, male, female, prefer to describe? Relationship status includes a prefer to describe. So we could have polygamous. We could have it's complicated. Who knows what people have put in the survey to answer their relationship status. And the same thing with our racial, cultural, or ethnic background. Check all that apply. Because we used to have just this or that answers. And if you would prefer to describe yourself in another way, in this year's survey, you were welcome to. Youth in AA and the US. Now they started in 68, and this colored bar here, I think it's reddish, shows people under 30. And you see this sharp increase, and this was my introduction to AA. I went to my first meeting in 1974, and more young people were coming in. And AA was growing in leaps and bounds. So there was 250,000 AA members in 68. By 74, we doubled to 500,000. In the early 80s, less than 10 years, we were 1 million members. And by the early 1990s, we were 2 million members, where we've sort of matured or plateaued. And again, this is in accordance with the method they are using at the General Service Office, which I can assure you that number is incorrect every year, but be it up or down, comparing 1 year's results to 10 years ago or last year, I think that is very helpful for us. So if I can take you back to my early AA in Montreal, you know, I was, you know, what was my favorite excuse? I'm too young to be an alcoholic. Was responded with, why don't you go to a young people's conference? We have one in St. Jerome, just north of Montreal, in January. So this time in 1977, I was at the St. Jerome Young People's Conference, and it was transformative because this is exactly what Jackie was talking about. People were talking my language. They were talking recovery in a way that made sense to me. People talking about getting back in their bands, going back to school, adventure holidays, whitewater rafting. It all of a sudden transformed the idea of recovery from a punishment that I was going to have to endure as a life sentence to an adventure. And this blue line, by 1983, this had start growing so much, we started counting the under 20s, and there were 3% there. And that's fallen off a bit, but still, we do have people of all age groups in recovery in AA. Now, why this drop off in youth? You know, maybe this was the end of the baby boomer era, and this was Gen X. The millennials are coming. They're a larger generation. I don't know. I'm just sort of reporting the data. We can talk about the whys. This is people who identify as female in AA. It's been going up since we've been taking the survey. And this colored line here, this is average length of sobriety. So in 77, it was a couple of years. That meant half the people in the room were sober less than 2 years. Half the people in the room were sober 2 years or more. That grew to 3 and 4 and 5 years as an average. And we're at 10 years average sobriety. Is that better? Is that, are we missing something? It's just evidence that we're changing. So we started measuring the years of sobriety. In 1968, we only had two categories, less than a year and all the rest of us. And it was exactly the same in 1971 and in 74. Well, let's start adding long-term sobriety, not only first year, which is blue, and 1 to 5 years, but also people sober over 5 years. And this time period from 74 to 89 or so shows that the majority of the people in the room were sober in their first 5 years. And then there's this crossover in 92 where the 5 years plus starts to eclipse the younger members. Part of this is just a maturing fellowship. And that I don't know that it's a bad thing. I don't know that it's a good thing, but certainly the dynamics are different in a meeting that's a bunch of crusty old timers than when everybody who is 11 months sober is sponsoring somebody who's 11 days sober. And I take this personally, actually, and I'll talk a little bit about that in my own story. So this bar graph just shows how we've adjusted to even measuring this material. So in 77, we started adding first year, 1 to 5 years, and 5 year plus. But the 5 year plus one in silver just started overshadowing everybody. So in 2007, we added 10 years. So this is 10 years plus. This is 5 years to 10 years. And this is 1 to 5 and first year. And then the 10-year started overshadowing. So in the 2014, we added a 20 plus years. So even how we look at our membership does have to change to a certain extent. Let me talk about my own personal experiences as AA was going through its growth and the young generation. So again, I come to my first young people's conference in 1977, and by 1980, there are twice as many teenagers. By 1983, there's 3% instead of 1%. And the overall population of people under 31 keeps growing as well. And we thought that would just keep growing forever. If you see down here, 51 plus, what we call the white wave of AA, the sea of white, see that that's in decline. So we thought we were in charge forever. But of course, now the average age of AA is 50. This is me with the Telecaster. This is a band called Sober Skid Row from the Toronto Young People's Conference in 1987. The theme of the conference was Stark Raving Sober. This is my then wife, the mother of my son, who I play music with now today. I've given them some anonymity protection here. Harvey had his glasses on, but Pam and Kathy and John. John's my sponsee. Kathy is Pam's sponsee. And this is how we sponsor people. What instrument do you play? Come to the rehearsal. Come to the practice. There's a sober dance. You got to come and play a few of your songs you're writing. So there was a lot of energy and youthful creativity. We would have been playing some original music, mostly written by Kathy. But we'd play the Pretenders and Talking Heads and Aretha Franklin and a Jefferson Airplane. I think right here we're playing When Doves Cry, just by the chord structure I see. It looks like we're playing a Prince song. But Kathy Sisler wrote some original songs we played, and one of them was called Rebellion Dogs. And I borrowed that clever use. The way she wrote the song was about these dogs that barked outside her window when she woke up in the morning, and they were there at night. And when she was outside, out in the real world, they were constantly biting at her feet. And so she made a verb out of the noun and a noun out of the verb to talk about these rebellion dogs. And I thought that was so clever, and it was a great song, that I used it for my publishing company. I just thought it was fantastic. But I'm not pining for the good old days, but I'm just saying that there was a time where we weren't all huddled around a big book. We were going whitewater rafting, and we would look at the grapevine on a Thursday, see that there's a conference for young people in Newport, Rhode Island. None of us had been there. And do you want to go? Sure. We got room for one more, you know, and a carload of young people would just go there. We would register when we got there. You could cross the Canada-US border back then with a library card. So there wasn't any trouble about them asking about our criminal records or any of that. And we had to, back in the day, no GPS, we had to unfold a map. That's not important now. Don't worry about that. That's really not an important detail. Okay. Here we go. Problems other than alcohol. Here's an interesting thing we asked about for 12 years. Other than alcoholism, do you now or have you ever had any other drug addictions? And when we first asked the question, it was under 20%. And then that grew, and then that grew, and then that grew. And by 89, it was well over 40%. That was around the time the movie Clean and Sober came out. That's how people talked. What did we do to respond to that? And I'm not suggesting these things have anything in common, but they have a correlation, but not necessarily causality. We came out with the blue card, reminding people we're in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting and asking members who share to restrict their meeting to sharing about their alcohol problem. And the meetings didn't have to read that, but it was available for groups who felt overwhelmed by the drug talk in AA. So we stopped asking this question. And, you know, what would it have gotten up to? Well, other people survey these sorts of things. And SAMHSA in the United States in 2019 found that of 14.5 million people with an alcohol use disorder, 71% had some sort of substance use disorder to go with that. And I've seen numbers ranging from 50 to 70%. So this here, we've been talking all about the Canada-US membership survey. We're going to talk about the Great Britain survey because it has some really pertinent present-day information in it that I think is really super useful. They do a lot of the same old, but they also ask some new questions. How COVID-19 is impacting our members and how are they dealing with online meetings? They ask, who believes in a higher power? And for those who do, what's your concept of a higher power? Is it religious or is it secular? So here's a look at shifting AA. This is the 1978 Great Britain survey results, and up at the top, the 2020. And this is a breakdown of length of sobriety. Less than 7 months in the darkest blue, 7 to 12 months. Up to 1 year, up to 2 years to 10 years, and over 10 years. And you can see over time the same thing, that in 1978, people who were sober less than a year would have been 40% of the people, and another 13% were sober just over a year to 2 years. And that shifted remarkably as AA's gotten older, where 44% of people now are sober over 10 years. But something I really like about the Great Britain survey is they also ask not only how long since your last drink, but how long have you been in AA? What's your length of AA membership? So we see something interesting here. Of all these old timers we had, 44% sober for 10 years, you can add another 11% of people with 10 or more years experience in AA. And they do both of these statistics and keep adding them. So adding these people with length of sobriety, that shortens things at the front end. But again, you know, the General Service Office of Great Britain doesn't have to go ask New York, can we do this or can we do that? They conduct themselves in accordance with their own needs. How many meetings do people go to? We have an average on our report, but here they show how many people go to one or two meetings a week. Now, most of the people who do are sober over 10 years. When we get to five or more meetings a week, Well, 23% are in their first 7 months. Another 13% add to that for the first year. But still, 27% of old-timers are going to almost a meeting a day or a meeting a day thereabouts. And I think that's great. And I think this sort of drawn-out statistical information is quite helpful. Then we were asked, since the pandemic, since we've moved to online meetings, has your meeting attendance increased or decreased? Both. Some people go to fewer meetings, but more people go to more meetings. And these differences here, this is Great Britain and Central Europe region, which is the English-speaking meetings in Central Europe. So for the first time in 2020, they included them in this survey. Now, remember what we heard about at the General Service Conference in Brooklyn just last spring. Does our membership reflect the population outside our meeting doors? Can we do more? And if we were in their shoes, how would we like to be approached? And here's what the numbers said in this survey, that 97% of people in Great Britain identify as Caucasian, white, and they've compared this to 5 years ago, which the people who identify as white population is on the increase, and how far off they are from the general YouGov census of 2021. And they saw this, these statisticians who are doing this saw this as noteworthy. And we do, and this is the report given in 2021. We do now have the 2021 survey numbers. Oops. We see that people who identify as white Caucasian has dropped to 81%. Compared to our 97% in the meetings. And every visible minority group has seen an increase in the last 5 years. Now, I'm not saying there's something wrong and we've got to fix it. This could be for many reasons, but the truth will set you free. And I think knowing about these things is great. Now, they also asked for the first time about where people fit on the sort of worldview spectrum. This is the actual question that was asked in the UK survey. Are you spiritual? Yes or no. Do you have a higher power? Yes or no. If yes, what form does your higher power take? Religious or secular? Survey says 91% of us identify as being spiritual. Do you have a higher power? 95% of us identify as with some power greater than ourselves. Is your higher power supernatural? Is it religious? 35 to 40% said yes. And is your higher power secular? Now, what the answer was 65%. And what did they mean by that? Do they mean the group? Do they mean inner resource? Do they mean the AA 12 steps, the program itself? Do they feel that it's life on life's terms? I do not know the answer to exactly what they meant. I'm just reporting out how they answered these questions. What the committee found significant is newcomers answer quite differently. People who were brand new since COVID-19, only 77% of them saw themselves as spiritual, where people 10 years sober or more would 93%. So what's happening? Are they having a spiritual experience when they get here, or are they conforming to a certain AA speak? Again, I don't know. But at least the people who are statisticians who did this report tell us that it's significant, the difference between how newcomers identify and how our regular rank and file members identify. So in the era of COVID, did you already have experience with online AA meetings? In Europe, over half of people were already Zooming, or they were members of In the Rooms, or they Skyped their AA, and it was a smaller number in Great Britain. And the question, have you changed to online AA? Overwhelmingly, everybody had. Now here, we ask a little bit more, how quickly did your group get set up? Isn't this great information to have? And look at this. Largely, most groups were all set up within a week or less. Some groups, it took more than a month, but a very small percentage of groups took that long to convert. But they also asked some other questions, like if you didn't switch to online, why not? Some people just feel that online meetings were no replacement for face-to-face meetings. They were concerned about anonymity. They didn't have the IT skills. Not my cup of tea, I am afraid to say. They didn't have the software available to them. I mean, good Wi-Fi is, the right of people with privilege, that's for sure. They already have their phone meetings that they attend. They have conflicts with other commitments, or they had security concerns about being in an AA meeting online. I think this is really helpful data, and it's important not to be one or the other about it, and listen to the minority and see what's going on for them. And we'll look at something in just a minute. Overall, in the past month, how much did helping other alcoholics help you to not drink? So the point, what they wanted to ask that they hadn't asked in previous surveys was about people's worldviews, how they understood higher power, and also how much service had to do with their sobriety. And here, 68% of people said helping others helped them to stay sober. Not everybody did, but the large majority definitely did. And here we go into more details. Okay, we're on Zoom. What are you doing? How does your group help people find a sponsor when there's no face-to-face meetings? Inviting people to stay behind after the meeting, very popular. Putting details in the chat. Some people don't like the chat on during the meeting because it's distracting. Other groups use it as a tool for outreach to newcomers. Offering a phone list. Other, I go to a group sometimes called Oh My God in Orlando, Florida, and they have a breakout room at the end of the meeting, and they invite anyone new to come chat with the greeters if they have any questions. So their sponsors meet sponsees and so on and so forth. Let's see. How easy or difficult did you find it adapting to online meeting formats? Well, as you can see, there's red and there's blue. The large percentage of people found that they answered very easy. But let's not ignore the fact that for some people, it was very difficult. And then, there's the Canadians would all be in the middle. You know, why did the Canadian cross the road to get to the middle? Anyway, but isn't this interesting? Carrying the message, doing our service work, contacting members outside of meetings, helping newcomers. We asked about all of these things and how easy or difficult it is online. Going forward, okay. When you've been looking at this, what were you thinking? Hey, how come we don't ask about this or that? Should USA and Canada be asking about service or asking about spirituality or higher power? The number one question I get with, what do they mean by spiritual? Why did they put secular versus religious? this is the language of professionals. It was our non-alcoholic trustees that came up with this line of questioning. And when they're talking to other professionals who help alcoholics, they're using the language that's common to them. I pick other words, but those are the words they use. But maybe we can improve on them. Maybe we can find a better way to define spirituality where we can get everybody nodding in agreement. Let me know when you do. But this is something that was on our minds in 2017. I know that is so 5 years ago, Joe. Why are you talking about that now? Technically, it's 6 years, but it was at our 2017 conference, and we haven't had our 2023 conference yet. But this sort of thing came up then, and let me just tell you what they said so all the voices are heard. So they put together a subcommittee to review the timing and process of conducting what should have been the 2017 membership survey if we were staying on our triennial path. So there were suggestions that had come up. And one suggestion was to add questions regarding the belief or non-belief of the members in AA. There was another to ask questions to determine the members' participation in service, just what the UK had done. And another one that the trustees were asking, the subcommittee was saying, consider asking the primary language of members filling out the questionnaire. And interestingly enough, in our 2022 questionnaire, we did ask about, are you finding meetings in the language that suits you best? So after extensive discussion, the committee, just I'll pause for a minute, and delegates in the room and trustees in the room, you can fix the nuances of this. But there are, in essence, when we talk about committees, there is the trustees committee, and they meet all around the clock. They meet at least four times a year for a weekend to discuss the business of archives or the business of public information, all of the different things that have to be done in AA service. And then there's the conference committee, which is largely delegates, but it also includes AA staff and some of the trustees. And they, of course, only meet once a year. So generally, the trustees committee is charged with looking into this or looking into that, some changes to our literature or what have you, putting out a new public service announcement or a new young people's video or whatever their task is. And they work on that through the year. And they don't just do it. They hand those recommendations to the conference committee. And the conference committee will either bring it to the floor, send it back to the trustees committee, or not proceed with it at all. So after extensive discussion back in 2017, the committee took no action on these requests, the higher power question, the what about service or what about language questions. And their rationalization, their statement was that higher power is too subjective, as is work service outside the group, and primary language didn't fall within our historical scope of the survey. So we didn't ask it before. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. The committee also agreed to table to a subsequent meeting a request from Area 79, British Columbia and Yukon, to consider changing the gender question on the AA membership survey to allow for a better reflection of the diversity of our membership. The committee agreed to forward the final report to the 2007 Conference Public Information Committee. And there, they took no action. Why not? Were they not clear on what questions to ask? Were they overburdened with other work? The research I've done in the AA archives was before 2017, so I've never had a chance to look at the trustees meeting or the conference committee meeting. But this was all clearly disclosed to members in the final report of the General Service Conference. Here are some sources and notes. This is where I got my data. If you think I've misconstrued it, please feel free to say so. A lot of this is for members only. Please don't post this on social media, but you can find a copy of the Canada USA final report. You can listen to my interview with Manny, our clinical psychologist, non-alcoholic trustee who chaired the survey subcommittee. And I had to go right to the General Service Office to say, here's what I'd like to do. I want to talk to someone from the Public Information Committee. They said, well, I don't know. We'll think about that. And then they talked to the Public Information Committee, and the Public Information Committee says, that depends. And so Manny and I met on Zoom off camera, in other words, not recording, just to sort of go over the parameters of why I was asking, what it was going to be purpose for. And then he went back to the committee and they got back to me. Now, if I was in a hurry, that'd be a problem. But if I've learned anything in AA, it's that a knee-jerk reaction in Alcoholics Anonymous takes about 3 years. Thank you very much. I will put in the chat a copy of this slideshow, so if anybody wants it, they're welcome to it. Thanks for your attention, everybody.
Well, thank you ever so much, Joe. And hopefully you can all mute yourselves. I believe you can.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Really gives a broad view of the whole movement. Fantastic stuff. I want to just bring your attention to Joe's publishing. Just do this quickly and we get ready for the Q&A. Just jump on there, rebelliondogspublishing.com, and look, there's fantastic stuff to get into. A lot of good conversation on their discussions.
There's some other discussion with delegates and other people in AA too, and some non-alcoholics who don't lose hope in we alcoholics, which is really great.
And you give out an email every week, or not every week, sporadically, you send out one, don't you, Joe?
Now it's whenever I feel like it. The great thing is that the podcasting world, the blogging world has really grown since I started. And so I just fill in the gaps. If I think, hey, no one's talked about this, I'll go to NADAC and take some notes, or I'll call somebody up and say, I'd like to talk to you. But it's a labor of love, that's for sure.
And you wrote a book as well, just while we have a recording. You were Beyond Belief, Agnostic Musings for 12-Step Life. You wrote that as well. And you were saying that was to do with there was a gap in the and people hadn't got a daily reading.
I was looking for a secular daily reflection. I couldn't find one. And so I was challenged by people who hold me accountable. Well, write your own damn book, as Joe sees it. And It took years because it was not a full-time job. It was a side project, and a lot of people helped, and some of them can see their contributions in there for sure.
Thank you. And you were one of the first to interview Bill Sherberg as well, weren't you?
Yes, before his book even came out, I had an agreement. Bill, I want to talk to you. And he said, great, no one's called yet, so come on down. And I drove to Connecticut where he lives. I caught some meetings in New York City, which I always love doing. And we sat down and talked for an hour and a half about his new book. I'd already had a chance to read a PDF of it, and he'd just gotten the first box of them. And he was tickled pink and wondered if he would have a target on his back. I mean, in AA, if you want to be criticized, do something. Anything, and people will criticize you.
Yeah,
thank you for that. That was my introduction mostly into writing the big book, The Creation of It. And then we have a meeting with him every Thursday. We have a reading meeting with Bill Sherberg every Thursday, and we have been recording him. And if you'd like to go to our website, growingunderstandinggroup.com, and there's a Q&A with him as well. It's excellent at the end of it to have that here. So just go into growing and understanding, go into writing the big book readings, and just quickly before we get back onto what Joe was doing, the survey says, next week, I just want to tell you what we have coming up next week, quickly. Well, on Thursday, on the 20th, we have we're in the 12th step, the most critical, Bill Shaver calls it the most critical and important juncture in writing the book, The Creation of Aid, the writing of the 12 steps. And just quickly, he said, nothing is more central to the book Alcoholics Anonymous than the program of recovery outlined in the 12 steps. And this is what Bill Shaver says. There are unfortunately no primary documents mentioning the actual writing of the steps. He said it is an unexpected gap in the otherwise rich archival records. He said there is not one document preserved from December 1938 or from the months immediately after that to either confirm or contradict Bill Wilson's version of what happened. He said it's simply not mentioned. He said this is truly problematic. I just love reading it when he said, I love him reading it. Next week, we have Friday, 27th of January, we have a presentation by Mark Vernon, William Blake, and he's asking us to step into the domain of the English poet William Blake, which he called eternity, the domain he called eternity. And with that, it's over to Joe. Really appreciate that. It's brilliant. And with that, it's over to Stuart.
Hello, everybody. Stuart Alcoholic. If you'd like to come in and ask a question, then please raise your hand in the participants section and I'll call on you. And we're going to start off with Hugh H. Good evening, Hugh.
Thank you, Stuart. And thank you, Joe, for that presentation. Hugh. That was quite interesting. I wanted to say a word about the 2017 conference action to not do anything about the survey. A close friend of mine was delegate at that conference, and he said the big problem was they could not agree on what to do about gender. And so they just decided not to do it at all. The other thing I wanted to say was, you know, in the beginning, when you were looking at the statistical information about how accurate this information is, that really, I'm sure that really applies to the people who were involved in the survey. It's an accurate representation of those people, which does not mean it's an accurate representation of AA to that level. Right? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, depending where you are in AA, AA's growing or AA's shrinking or AA's staying the same. And it's very regional, that's for sure.
Right. Well, and the methods they use can't possibly accurately represent all of AA. So, great job.
Thanks. Great seeing you.
Good seeing you too.
We're going to go to Kenji in San Francisco.
Hi, everybody. Kenji, addict, alcoholic. So, two things. One is I noticed that that first slide that you had of young people over 30, that right about the point at which it peaked out and started falling is right when you hit 30. And so you aged out of that survey. So I'm wondering how much that was just that wave of people just reached 30 and were no longer represented in that survey. And kind of extrapolating from that, it seems to me that these surveys kind of need to have population trends in general superimposed over them to see what they really mean in terms of how it compares to overall, you know, population, like baby boomers. But the other thing I want to ask you about is, so in 2022, I probably attended at least 500 meetings. They were all secular and they were all on Zoom. And I never heard a peep about the 2022 survey. I certainly never took it because I never even knew about it. So what do you think? My guess is that we're totally not represented there unless somehow I just was dozing when it was announced. What do you think about that? I mean, it didn't reach us in secular AA on Zoom.
In the UK, if I understand correctly, they not only sent the survey out to some of the secretaries of groups that they had on file, they posted on the website that they were looking for people to reply, so it was open. In Canada, USA, there are groups randomly selected from every area in Canada, USA, and those groups are given surveys for their members to fill out. They've done 8,000 members, and they've done 38,000 members at different years that they've done the survey. And like, I'm not a doctor, not a statistician, not a demographer. I sponsor some, but and I speak with some, but I am reticent to say, well, this happens because of this. But they say that they've learned how to do this enough, because they don't do it just for us, to get an accurate sample. We've seen elections where things didn't happen the way that the prognosticator suggested they would. And so everything should be held with a grain of salt. Like, the question is not, is it absolutely accurate? It's, is it helpful? And yes, I think, you know, in the financial planning world, they look at the impact of baby boomers. And that's right. When I aged out of being a young person, so did a lot of other baby boomers. Generation X wasn't as large a population. Maybe that had something to do with it. I'm really curious about that sort of stuff, and I really care about that sort of stuff, but I'm not 100% sure why. But I do know that the General Service Conference has spent you know, a good amount of time on young people's videos and outreach. And I think the key is, you know, go to where they're at and find out what can we do to alter or improve what we're doing in order to be more useful. And so to some extent, we're getting there, I guess.
Final question, but did they reach into the Zoom world? Do you have any idea?
Oh, I'm sure they did not. They're just, there's some delegates here who could jump in and talk about some of the actionable items for this year. But I know our area is considering having a district just for virtual meetings. And I know others are, and then they'll have group reps and group numbers, and we'll do a better job of that. But I think there's been some hiccups in recording the whole AA story as we've moved from brick and mortar meetings to brick and mortar meetings and virtual meetings. So I think we're working on that now. And we'll be better at it in 5 years than we are now, for sure. But yeah, things fall through the cracks for sure. But you saw in that survey that they talked to people who got sober since COVID in the 2020 Great Britain survey. So that's the sort of thing that even the 2022 Canada USA survey sort of touched on. But how they got the, you know, were they able to reach the members who've never been to a face-to-face meeting? I don't know.
Great. Thank you very much. We're going to go to, I hope I pronounced this correctly. Forgive me if I don't. Is it Brian?
Brian.
It's not, it's spelled B-R-I-E-N.
Yeah, it's Brian.
sorry.
Geez, thanks, Joe. How'd you know that? I won't ask. So, Joe, a couple of questions. You work for do you work for the General Service Office in New York City?
No.
Oh, okay. Because I'm sorry, I just got confused because I know about, you know, and maybe it would have been helpful. I don't know. It's to look at the General Service Conference structure in AA, because I heard a lot of inside baseball and that first person plural, we. So when you're saying we, I thought you were talking
about Brian, can I just ask you, are you a delegate or general. Brian, sorry, Brian, are you a delegate or so? Can you just give us, have you been a delegate before?
I've not, no.
No, thank you.
Is that a requirement?
No. I just wanted to know where you were coming from with the question. That's all. Sorry, I just wanted to know.
Okay. I was just confused. Just a lot of inside baseball stuff that I saw a lot of data, which I myself could have, you know, read and reread, but I wasn't hearing a lot of conclusions. And that you've presumably drawn from having delved into the data and presented it. Yeah, I mean, are there conclusions, or was it just a review of data?
Just a review of data.
Oh, okay. All right. And you're where? You're in. You reside in Toronto, is that correct, Joe?
No.
Oh, okay. I thought.
One more question, Brian.
All this stuff about the Toronto group. I thought.
One more question, and we'll move on.
Okay. One more question. No, I'm all done.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for sharing.
Thank you for sharing.
We're going to go to Brian B now. Hello, Brian.
Hey, everybody. Yeah, sorry about the camera thing. I'm still working on that. Anyway, just to let you know that, I recently found, just in going to Zoom meetings a lot in the last year or so, that there are actually not really splinter groups. I wouldn't call it that, but that's lack of a better word. But there are more focused groups, like, you know, Black Americans tend to have their own group, especially here in the South where I live, you know, and, you know, somehow, I don't know how that works with central office yet. I'm just volunteering down there to understand that. But, you know, I know there's also a gay and lesbian club here. So I'm just wondering, how does that all factor into this data, you know, and how do they reach those groups within Alcoholics Anonymous? And I'm sorry if I'm offending anybody that thinks it's all white, but it's not. I apologize. Thank you.
No, I think that's what they're trying to get at. And I've seen a proliferation of BIPOC meetings, Black Indigenous People of Color, on Zoom, because it reaches anywhere where at least people have Wi-Fi and data. They can get to a meeting. Same with LGBTQIA meetings, women's meetings, secular meetings, and there's neurodivergent meetings where people fall somewhere on some spectrum, and they host their own meetings too. And my interpretation of what GSO is telling me is that they are trying to be more sensitive to these needs. What do you need? What can we do to alter or improve the AA experience for you? And of course, anyone can start a meeting that suits their specific needs. Now, that's true in Canada, USA. There are other general service conferences that don't recognize special purpose groups. You can't get a group number if you don't invite every person who identifies as an alcoholic to attend. Again, different general service conferences run things a different way. But I think that's the whole idea. I certainly, as a young person, really I was one foot in, one foot out, until I met people my age talking my language and encouraging me to keep trying in AA. And I'm sure that happens to people of color. I know that happens in the LGBTQIA community. Certainly for some women, they prefer women's groups. And, with Zoom, I think imagination is our only limit as far as that's concerned. But thanks for the question. And I think we'll be hearing more about how we stand when this year's survey comes out.
Just to let you know, Joe, I am one of those guys too. I got sober at 16 and I'm now 48. So.
Yeah. Wow.
Great. Thank you very much. We're going to go to Donald and Rita now. Good evening. Hello, Donald, or Rita.
Sorry, Donald it is. Sorry,
Rita had gone to bed already.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm done. I came into AA back in 72, but I got clean and sober in 1990, and I've remained clean and sober since. But one of the things that I wanted to ask, if AA, NA, GA, and CODA, has there been any attempt at incorporation of and pooling of ideas and pooling of data in that, and as to where sometimes they could come together into the one room, because sometimes as it has often been done in, I noticed when I was in Thailand, they had what they call the Freaky Friday meetings, most successful, and where people could get identification beyond just the limited scope of AA, because a lot of people have multiple traumas. We've come in with those traumas. And has there been any research done in that realm? And Zoom has been marvelous. You know what I mean? And it's international. You know what I mean? And AA can blossom, and with Zoom and with what you guys are doing, if it's brought in together, it's a question, and that's just how I feel as an old person, you know.
Thanks so much, Donald. You know, I have, seeing as how you asked, I've looked at the Cocaine Anonymous membership surveys and the Narcotics Anonymous membership surveys. And there's, if anyone likes reading these things, 12-step interventions and mutual support programs for substance use disorders, an overview, compares the membership surveys of AA, NA, and CA. And in terms of how ethnically diverse the programs are, back in the time they did this study, it was 2007, AA was 81% people who identified as Caucasian, NA was 73%, and Cocaine Anonymous in their 1996 survey was 55%. And NA and CA have done membership surveys that are more recent than those, but this was just sort of a study done that's on the NIH website. Yeah. And if you Google it, you can look at it. And I don't know why that is, but that's what I've seen out there. And in terms of mixing and matching programs, I can't really speak to that. I know that some groups are loosey-goosey about having people share in their meetings from OA or SLAA at their AA meeting, and other groups invite them to come but say you can't participate in the meeting. If we were at my home group, I'd have more to say about that, but how all of AA should do it, not so much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Glad it's opening. Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to go to Bob Kay in Toronto now. Hello, Bob. Good evening.
Yeah, good evening. Thanks for the presentation. It was quite a bit less satanic than I expected, David Kennedy. But these surveys are fascinating to me. And it's interesting in AA that if the information is something we don't like, we start dissing the survey. But these are the same surveys that gave us information 25 years ago that we liked. And before I go any further, I want to apologize for something. I came into AA in 1991. Membership peaked in 1992, and it's been going down ever since. So I'd like to apologize for that. And that's what I want to talk about. When there's any question about AA literature, there's two factions in AA: those of us that don't want us to leave 1939, and those of us that think we're stuck in 1939. So any motion for change is met with a resistance, and this expression, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, comes up. But we had 2.4 million members in 1992, and the most recent number I've seen has dropped under a million. The 2021 number has dropped under a million. And those are AA's numbers, and these are done by professionals. I took statistics at the University of Toronto. I'm not a statistician, but it was one of the courses I took. And, you know, when we hear after election, they predict the winner, you know, 20 minutes after. Well, people can say, nobody polled me, nobody, you know, they don't have to poll everybody. And I think these statistics are pretty accurate. The 95% figure early on within a range of, that reminded me of when I was in school. But AA's numbers have gone down, 500,000 people. The population during that time has gone up 25 or 30%. And we are losing ground at some point. So, you know, we are doing some things wrong, I think. You didn't get into that too much. But it's good that we're considering new approaches. You know, the LGBT community is a delicate community, and my father was in AA since 61. They were pretty racist back then. AA population in Toronto does not look like the general population in Toronto. I interviewed a Jamaican who came in AA in 1974, and he was treated very badly. And other people stood up for him, and he stayed, and he's sober almost 50 years. But there's no question racist elements and homophobia and that sort of thing. I hope we're moving in the right direction on all that stuff, and I think we are.
Okay. Thank you, Bob.
I'll keep my opinions to myself, but I will share that when I worked on the Public Information Committee in Toronto, a very diverse city where if people of color aren't over 50% of Toronto, it's pretty close. And it certainly our AA meetings aren't any more progressive than others I've seen. But we would speak to a number of community leaders and workers about AA, and some of it is cultural. For some people, going to a room full of strangers to air your whole family's dirty laundry just is not culturally done. And this sort of self-help movement is a very American idea. But I do think there are potential signs of systemic discrimination where we, as Kathy put it, we're inclusive in our hearts, but are there things we just do because we've always done them? And they're maybe not the best way to make everybody feel comfortable. And I haven't worked in public information since we went to face-to-face meetings, but I hope they're still looking at these things, because Toronto is a good petri dish for this sort of thing. I've been able to speak to recent refugees from Burmese with a translator with a couple of other AA members. And, you know, they'd never been to an AA meeting. They'd never heard of it, but they certainly had a problem with alcohol. Thanks, Bob.
Thank you very much. And we're going to stay with the theme of Toronto, and we're going to go to Eddie G. Hello, Eddie. Good evening.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks, Joe, for the presentation. Very good. I was going to say that I just realized that the Area 83 archivist suggested, and we went forward with it, to do a survey with the area. And it started out like, well, I was there 2018 as archives chair, and the survey was finished 2018. And what we did was we used the 2017 questions. I think there was one question that we didn't use. I forget which one. But we asked the area committee table, and And then we came up with the questions, and then we asked all the DCMs to give it to their groups. And if the groups could do it at their business meeting, so we'd get more people to participate. And I forget the numbers, but I was really impressed that it was a good turnout, that people that participated. But are you aware that we did this survey? And if not, I could look for it and get it to you, because I thought it was really interesting, because it was never done before. It was just general. And so just specifically on that, on the area, it was at first I was a little reluctant, because I thought, oh God, I don't know. But it turned out well. Anyways, thanks, Joe.
Well, you remind me of something. I mean, there's a novel idea, an area or a district doing their own membership survey. Mm-hmm. Certainly the data would be more relevant to their outreach, working with the professionals and the general public. Mm-hmm. And even at the group level, I mean, you know, I've spent my fair share of time pointing a finger at general service office and what needs to be done, yada, yada, yada. But what are we doing at our own home group to ensure that we're an open group for anybody who arrives from any cultural background? Do we avoid using acronyms and sort of AA speak that might make people who are new or sort of unfamiliar with our culture feel excluded from the conversation we're having? And I really think that's a good idea. I've been critical of our own, and I've expressed this to our Ontario Regional Conference Committee. I mean, ever since the beginning, they've had, you walk into this big ballroom and there's Ontario Regional AA Conference Committee and a picture of Bob and Bill. Now, I'm not ashamed of who our founders are, but if we're putting up, you know, the first two members, how about the first lesbian, the first person of color, the first, you know, young person? Let's build that out a little bit, because if I'm walking into that room, visible minority, and that's the only thing that's lit up, everything else is in darkness, I don't know, but I think I would be a little bit unnerved and on my guard, you know. So little things like that, I think, can make a difference, and I would love to see that. And Eddie is a great source for me at the Toronto Archives. Often I can save a trip to New York because Eddie's got it in Toronto Archives. I can get into some of those trustees' notes. Thanks, Eddie.
Thanks, Joe.
David Kennedy.
I'm listening.
Can you take over? My daughter's just hurt herself. I'm going to have to go.
Thank you, Stuart.
Thank you, Stuart.
Thank you. Sorry, guys.
No, by all means.
Doris Mack in Ottawa. Hello, Doris.
Hi. I thought there was someone ahead of me in the with the hands up. But anyway, now that I'm here. I wanted to know, Joe, if you have a sense that within, say, the service structure of AA, if there's an awareness of, say, secular AA and the BIPOC meetings that are going, or are we developing these silos and to that defy our quest for unity? I'm referencing, I guess, my district, though I'm come from a secular group, they made the change instead of saying the secular, the serenity prayer at the beginning of the district meeting, they changed it to the unity pledge, which I thought was nice. But in asking to participate in the local area conference, secular people were told, well, why don't you go have your own? And I know we do have separate conferences. Do you have any sense that, as I said, the structure is aware of the secular movement within AA? And is there going to be any blending of these, or does the secular groups need to develop their separate service structure?
Well, let me share what I've seen. And again, this is one AA member's perspective. Toronto, of course, has had its issues with special purpose groups, women's groups, LGBTQ groups, secular groups. And I think it's a moving thing, just like all of those survey results we looked at. When you stack them on top of each other, you see it waxes and wanes. And I think there is, discrimination inside of AA. And I think there is a lot of love and tolerance inside of AA. And so sometimes one rises to the surface more than another. It is very discouraging to hear, why don't you go start your own fellowship? Of course, everybody has the right to go and do that. And speaking of what Bob was asking about AA's growth, well, being a copycat is the best flattery. I mean, there are a lot of other peer-to-peer groups now that serve the still suffering, and we're not on a membership drive, and more isn't necessarily better. And I think that having the choice is great, but I think we'll always have to deal with human nature, and I don't think it's an AA problem per se, but we all have biases. I have mine. I've badmouthed other groups for the way they run their meetings, and shame on me for that, because it's none of my business, right? If I had a perfect equanimity in my attitude, I would neither be for nor against any new movement in AA. why don't we try that out? I think our founders had more of that sort of, let's just try. I mean, I've never been to a group that gets everybody sober and gets along with every other group. And until we have that group, I think we should all try new things to try to improve our reach for sure. But the other thing is, groups don't have to participate in AA as a whole. I have people who have said to me that they attend their special purpose groups because of the discriminatory remarks and comments and alienation they feel in mainstream AA. And that group doesn't send a general service rep to the district to participate, and they don't have to. There's still an AA meeting. Whether they just bark commands at general service or if they get right in there and roll their sleeves up and help out. Part of it is familiarity. The more we're working hand in hand with other people from different cultural backgrounds, I think the better we will get, I hope, at being more sensitive and other religions, right? It's not just those who believe and those who don't believe, but those who voice their belief in a whole different way that wouldn't use God or a he or a what have you. And how are we gonna make space for those people too? I hope we're all thinking about that. Good to see you, Doris.
Thank you, Joe. I think the founders had a vision also. It was a vision. I don't think it was practically the way they would have liked it. We haven't reached our vision yet, let's say. Yeah. I'm going to call this Angel. Hello, Angel. Would you like to tell us where you're coming in from as well, please? Thank you. You ought to be able to unmute, Angel. Hopefully you can.
I can use my arm. Hi, Angel. I call it from Seattle, Washington.
Oh, hello.
Hi. Thanks for all this. This is very fascinating. I have lots of opinions about stuff, but nobody cares. I find it interesting that we even ask about if people are on the survey about God or spirituality. For me, I always think that's kind of an outside issue too. I know we use the word God, but then you say it's of your understanding. For me, it's really sad that people, we say we're all inclusive. Sorry about the background noise. But we're all inclusive, but people think that we're not, and that's sad. Because a lot of the stuff, the individual groups are also, my personal opinion, or outside issues, because it has nothing to do with alcohol, and that's our primary purpose, right? But anyway, I have a question about like the surveys. Was there any, like, is there anything done on death? Like, how many people have died since AA started that died sober? And also how many members might have relapsed during COVID, like when that started? That's all.
I don't know the answer to those very good questions. And we don't do exit surveys in AA. And so it's hard to keep some of those records. But I hope, since early this century, a lot more interest has been put towards peer-to-peer help, AA, and the larger community. AA is probably more studied than any other peer-to-peer group just because we're ubiquitous. You can find us in almost every community. So if you're doing a study in the UK and Australia and Canada and the USA and somewhere else, there's probably an AA meeting somewhere around that university. But more of them are studying, and they know more and more about us, about people who leave AA, and they measure outcome rates not only in uninterrupted sobriety, but also on the DMS scale. If they no longer meet alcohol use disorder criteria, because you know, they're only binging once every 2 months instead of, you know, once every 2 days, they consider that they got helped by AA. They actually benefited. Their health is better than it was before. And it's gone from a chronic condition to what they consider manageable. So their measurement for success is different than an AA group's might be. But I think more of that data is available, but it's still not, you know, it's not easy to search. A lot of these things, you need to have a sort of university number to get the data, or pay $24, and you don't even know if you want or will be able to use the data. But I like the way you're thinking, and I would love more concrete answers to those questions. Thank you, Angel.
Thank you. And we're going back to the UK, and we're Prague and Worcester.
Thanks, David, and thanks, Joe, for your presentation. I don't know if you were aware of the fact that the GB last year held a race day convention, which was originated from GSO, and some really, really positive, hopefully, work is going to be done to reach the ethnic minority people, because the first time in 20 years that I've seen anything like that happen. I'm a person of colour, and I've mainly done my recovery in white meetings, because the discrimination was very subtle. It happened, but it was very subtle. There's been talk about trying to carry the message to the ethnic minority people and talk about it, but nothing positive was being done. And one of our local intergroups, our structure is slightly different to the US and Canada, is that they created a position for a community liaison officer who does lots of outreach work for the ethnic minority people, so they can actually meet them like halfway house kind of thing, and then bring them into AA once they get comfortable that they can get recovery and that. So I just wondered if you were aware of that or not, and just glad to be seeing something positive has been done to reach the people of colour or other religions and all of those things. Thanks.
I'm very heartened by the amount of attention that went into safety in AA for a number of years, and they got a lot of good ideas from a lot of members and a lot of groups and a lot of districts and areas. And AA has, offered some literature in that area. But all of those things, I think, have their feet in the same direction. The local home groups, right up to the general service office, and that's great to hear. it warms my heart. Thank you for
sharing. Also, I was meant to say, I'm actually a past conference delegate, and I did that conference delegate very, very early in my recovery. It's the best service that I ever did.
Thank you, Prague. We might go and stop the recording at this point, Joe. We do stay behind after if people would like to do that. The meeting, we call it the parking lot meeting, I believe, or the meeting after the meeting. Joe, can I just ask you one thing before I do that? And it's not we can bring the next one if you want. But it is for those who want it rather than those who need it. That surely affects the people who want to stay and be members of this marvelous, in my opinion, marvelous, wonderful movement, spiritual movement. A lot of people just want to come in and they might have reached the rock bottom, or they might have reached the place where they're ready to commit.
Well, again, what I've seen, there are people that are forced to go to AA because of their employer or because of some legal problems. And after the time that they are obligated to for whatever external constraints are put on them, they stay, right? They might not have reached rock bottom and they stay. And then I know AA graduates. I know lots of people who came here. They were like tourists. They went to the conventions. They bought all the literature. They went to all the meetings and they got on with their life. And I don't think we're letting them down somehow. And that's that speaks to how, you know, I think that's great. I think that's wonderful. The idea to tell a newcomer that this isn't a life sentence, you don't have to go to AA forever, is I think nothing to be ashamed of. And I mean, there's all of these sort of sort of coffee talk chatter about what happens to people after they leave AA. And we definitely see the ones come back who it went horribly bad for them, for sure. Just of the people I've known throughout the years, I know plenty of people that how's AA going, or they might come for a friend's medallion every couple of years, right, to celebrate their sobriety. And it's good to see old friends. But they did get what they needed from AA, and they're living a good life for it.
Thank you for that, Joe. Appreciate it. Francis, we're going to kind of wait on the next one because I think we could end up going into another cycle. And we're going to ask you to close in a second. Thank you, Francis. Francis has been our, as you can see, we call him spiritual bomber finder. I don't know, it means those Zoom bombers come in. Francis, thank you for all your service. Joe, will you close the meeting in a second if I can just bring people to let them know what we have next week, just quickly again to do that. We're going to be going to, from Joe C, the agnostic man. Joe, is it okay to call you that?
Feel free.
Thank you, Joe, which I love reading your stuff as well, I have to say, on your website. It's marvelous, mind-expanding. And we're going from there to next week. We're going over to a man, a friend of mine. Well, I know the guy regularly, locally here, Mark Vernon, philosopher chap. He's going, we're stepping into the domain of the English poet William Blake, and we're going to see a world, hopefully in a grain of sand, and a heaven in a wildflower. So this is what William Blake gave us direction towards, and he's going to ask the question, why is it we're still not getting the experience that? Why are people not gone into the imagination and gone more into the material realm of things? So that's next week, and that's to do with we have entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. And this is next Thursday. We have, well, great fans here of Bill Sheberg. Bill Sheberg called, we're in chapter 23, writing the 12 steps. Bill reads for us. He reads a section for us with the group members, and he also stays behind and takes Q&A from the members. And he called this the most critical and most important juncture, chapter 23, the writing of the 12 steps. And with that, we're going back to Joe C to close. Joe, did you want to have anything in particular to close with? I have got something ready in case you ask me to get up the Unity one. I don't know if you're going to ask me that.
Unity's good. How about the responsibility declaration?
I got the two of them up. I said, Joe, I'll ask me one of those.
Okay. I'm responsible. That's when cool. Anyone,
I'm responsible for
anywhere.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
And I am going to pause the recording at that point. Hopefully.